वासुदेव सुतं देवं कंसचानूरमर्दनं
देवकी परमानंदं कृष्णं वंदे जगद्गुरुं। गुरुर्ब्रह्मा गुरुर्विष्णु गुरुर्देवो महेश्वरः गुरुस्साक्षात् परब्रह्मा तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। ध्यानमूलं गुरोर्मूर्तिः पूजामूलं गुरोर्पदं मंत्रमूलं गुरोर्वाक्यं मोक्षमूलं गुरोर्कृपा। ओं सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ओं शांति शांति शांति। यस्टरडे वी dealt too much, and that will do it. That's better. Yeah. With some aspects of the story that forms the background of this scripture called Bhagavad Gita. How this conflict between what we call good and what we call evil. This we have not had examined. Whether there is a thing which is good, whether there is a thing which is evil. If there is a thing called good, no. If there is a thing which is good, or if there is a thing which is evil, we have not yet examined. We have come to call something good, we have come to call something bad, evil. And there is a conflict between these two going on all the time in our own life. Most of the time we are not aware of it. And it seems to grow, this conflict seems to grow when you become aware of it. So that when there is a feeling that this inner conflict is growing, that day by day I seem to be becoming more and more vicious, there may be reason for congratulation. Again, one should not jump to conclusions. It may be because I am actually becoming more wicked, or because I am becoming more aware. As for instance, there are these statistics about diseases, for instance. When the statistics show that the number of sick people in the world is on the increase, it may mean either of these two things. It may mean that the world is becoming more and more sick. It may also mean that whereas a few years ago one did not know that such and such sickness existed, now because of our scientific approach to illness we are becoming more aware of it. Even here, one is desirable, the other is not desirable. It is desirable if I am becoming more aware inwardly of the conflict, more aware inwardly of the evil in me. And it is not desirable if I am becoming so complacent, so intellectual, so nice and so rational, that I don't care if it is good or bad, I keep adding to my evils. But this conflict goes on all the time, all the time. No one except the two people at the two ends of the scale of evolution are exempt. Who are those two people? One, a total idiot. He has no problem at all. A complete idiot, an imbecile. He has no problem at all, he is quite satisfied. He is sitting there like a block of stone and he is absolutely calm, contented, happy, peaceful. And on the other, at the other end of the scale, the enlightened person in whom there is no problem. The man of enlightenment, the sage, the yogi, has also no problem. At one end, the imbecile has no problem. At the other, the yogi has no problem. In between, all of us have problems, have this conflict constantly going on. In the case of the imbecile, the trouble has not yet started. It is like a little boy of 3 and a little girl of 2. In their case, there is no problem at all, is there? They run around naked, they hit each other, they do all sorts of things. But in them, the sexual desire has not yet awakened. Yes, they are immature. They are little, 3 and 2. I don't know nowadays if this is true. It's children, little children of 3 and 2. We presume that they know nothing. In their case, they are innocent because all these desires are dormant in them. The problems have not begun to stir. And on the other hand, the person, the yogi who has full mastery over his senses, he is also free from lust. Because yes, in him these things were awake and he has overcome them. So these two extremes do not suffer from the problems and the conflicts which afflict us, which are a great nuisance to us. And this conflict is portrayed in the scriptures in the form of legends and so on. It may be literally true. There are people who believe that the Mahabharata war actually took place. It's a historical fact. And there are those who believe that the war never took place actually, but it contains a philosophical, esoteric meaning. Just as there are people who believe Jesus Christ actually lived, and there are those who believe that, what do they call now? It's a mushroom cult. Did you hear that? Yeah. That the whole thing is symbolical, that it is sort of mushroom cult which was there at that time, the sacred mushroom. We don't know. How do you know that your great grandfather existed? You do not see him. Huh? What is the proof? The only proof you are going to say is that I am here. If my great grandfather was not there, then my grandfather was not there either. My great grandfather was born of those parents. But maybe your great grandmother, had a virgin birth. Yeah, who knows? So most of these things are non-debatable. Whether a thing called the Mahabharata war was fought 5,000 years ago or not, who is going to prove or who is going to disprove? And of what consequence is it to me? It is of no real valid value for me. I am not interested in the historicity or otherwise of this war. But what I am interested in is, what can I learn from it? In what manner can I benefit from it? If I can benefit from the war or what took place at that time, then I am quite satisfied. I am not a Christian. But if I can draw a couple of lessons from the teachings of Jesus Christ, I am quite happy. Whether Jesus existed or not, it's none of my business. Whether Buddha was a historical personality or whether it's a thought of enlightenment embodied, I don't care. I am only interested in finding a solution to my own problem. And therefore, we who are faced with this day-to-day problem, the conflict in our own life, we read these scriptures not in order to create more conflicts concerning them. You and I can sit and argue for 10 years, did Krishna existed or not? This is creating one more problem. I am not interested in that. I want to solve my problem. I want this aid of the scripture to help me solve the other troubles I have. My wife quarrels with me, or my husband quarrels with me, my father threatens to disinherit me, my mother is dead. I want to find out how I can solve these problems, not to come and quarrel with you and create some more problem. Hence, when we study this, people say that we should have an objective mind. I don't know whether that is possible. We should have a subjective mind. When you study a scripture, they say study it objectively. I say no, study it subjectively. Try to discover all the time, how is it related to my life, my daily life? What can I do? In what manner can I be benefited by it? Can I find some light in this scripture which may enable me to live a better life, to take a better decision tomorrow morning, to make the right choice tomorrow morning? That is what I want, that is what I need, that is the conflict with which I am faced. That's why Mahatma Gandhi, I'm sure all of you have heard the name, he used to study the Gita and it gave him political advice. Why not? Gandhi was a political saint or a statesman saint. He studied the Gita. He says, whenever he was faced with a terrible problem, he turned to the Gita. In it, he found some solace, some lesson, some hint of how to wage the political battle. Good, good. Have you, anyone here who is interested in this I Ching? Huh? Yeah. You turn some page and try to find out. The I Ching may or may not answer your question as I may answer or somebody else may answer. So you open it and it gives you a challenge. You try to figure out the meaning. It's all done by you. The I Ching does not do it. Very good. And you believe in the rightness or whatever it is of the answer. It gives you some help. The same way you may use the tarot cards or astrology, palm history, anything you like. What you and I are interested is, can I find, with the help of these things, these are all helps, with the help of these things, can I find a solution to my problem? Let us not bluff ourselves. Even though we may be, you and I may be sitting here and talking about world problems, we are only solving our own problems. Even if we are sitting here and discussing the Middle East war or the Vietnam situation, we are not going to solve those problems. But your conscience hurts. There is something in you which stirs. It's worrying you. You want an answer to that problem. Not to the Vietnam question. No, no, no. You're not interested in the Vietnam question at all. You are only interested in your own conscience. It stirs, it hurts, it worries you. What must I do with it? You want to find a solution. If you understand this background, then the study of the scripture becomes interesting and valuable. Otherwise not. We saw yesterday that these wicked people had determined that somehow the good ones should be dispossessed and dismissed if possible. All their properties taken and if possible destroyed. Krishna was the friend of the good ones, the good people, particularly affectionate towards them. Probably he was impartial and only the good people, the five brothers, consulted him frequently. I wonder if that is clear. For instance, I may be friendly with both of them, both these gentlemen, they are the same to me. One is not more important to me than the other, one is not a greater friend to me than the other. Both of them are exactly the same. But it is just possible that this gentleman comes to me more frequently for discussions and he does not. So that he goes away telling you that Swami told me so and so, Swami told me so and so. He has no communication. Does it mean that I am partial? No. Yeah? It does not mean that I am partial. I am one-sided, I am biased. To me both are same, but he comes to me more often than the other person. So it's possible that Krishna was totally impartial. And these five good people consulted him very often, took his counsel very often, took his advice very often. And they had been exiled, they had been cheated, they come back and consult with Krishna. Krishna is sort of Christ for the Hindu. They say, now what do you want us to do? We gambled, we lost everything. Our enemies are, our cousins are in possession of our property. What shall we do? They send a messenger, nothing happens. And then finally, Krishna himself goes to the enemy's court. And this is very important to remember. Yesterday, we touched upon this. To fight is not right, but it is just possible that in certain eventualities, to fight may not only be right, but most essential. In certain ultimate eventualities. What these are is always very difficult to determine. And there are some, probably I am one of them, who say that modern warfare is all the time unrighteous. Modern warfare is all the time unrighteous, and therefore, instead of open warfare, you may adopt other methods like, for instance, strike. There again, it's all very debatable, very difficult things to discuss offhand. Because in those days, I believe this was true even of Western civilization as of Eastern civilization, yes? Any of you have read Ivanhoe, Sir Walter Scott's? If you read, if you take it more or less the mirror of the civilization that existed during his time, one didn't strike an opponent if he didn't have the same weapon as you had, yes? Chivalry. If you and I are having a duel and if my sword fell down, you would pick it up, give it to me and then hit me. Now what is the position? Nothing at all. You don't even know whom you are killing. You are sitting in an air-conditioned office, maybe in the Pentagon somewhere, I don't know where people fight nowadays. And just press a button. And just press a button. And a bomb comes and falls here. What have I done? Nothing at all. Just because I am living in America. You see the point? So now there is no righteousness at all so far as the war is concerned. Nothing is right in modern warfare. So one has to discriminate here. In those days, it was not so. In those days, war was fought on certain principles. People had to fight a war because they had explored all other means of a settlement. And so, finally, Krishna himself goes as an ambassador of peace, as a messenger of peace. He goes to these wicked people and tells them, "We are for peace." A beautiful argument which probably President Nixon and what is the other chap's name there on the other side? Bulganin, is it? Kosygin, that's it. Probably, or both of them are saying the same thing today. What was said by the Pandavas and the Kauravas 5000 years ago, that we want peace. It's interesting, isn't it? Both of them want peace and both of them want to fight. And both of them say we want to fight for the sake of peace. Both of them say that we want to fight in order that there may be no more battle, no more fighting in the world. So, Krishna himself goes to the Kaurava side and pleads for peace, a peaceful settlement. The man of peace always is prepared to yield. The man of peace. The man of peace is prepared to yield. He loves peace so much that it doesn't matter to him that if a little bit of his property is lost. It doesn't matter to him if his prestige is injured a little bit. I suppose you remember the story of how King Solomon solved a great puzzle. Remember the child which two women claimed as theirs? Two women. Do you know the story? All of you? Two women, perhaps some of them don't. Two women claimed a baby as theirs. One woman said it's my child, and another woman said it's my child. And who is going to prove? There's no proof. It is said that Solomon, eventually unable to decide who the mother was, told his servant or the soldier, "Cut it into two pieces. Give one piece to each mother. Cut the baby into two pieces. Give one piece to each woman." And one woman immediately burst saying, "No, no, no, please don't do it. Please don't do, let the other woman have it." And Solomon decided, quite simple, the child belongs to this woman, take it away. Even if I do not have it, let it not be cut, destroyed. Right? This is true love. This is what is needed if you long for peace. Whether in the domestic sphere, social sphere, national, international, whatever sphere it is. The person who truly longs for peace is prepared to yield. Yield first. So, Krishna goes to these Kauravas and tells them, "My friends, they are Pandavas, the good people, they are prepared for anything. Give them just 5 houses to live in. 5 villages, or if you can't do that, 5 houses to live in. That's all they want." And now, it is a sign of arrogance that when the opponent yields, you think he is weak and so you want to climb a little higher up. That shows arrogance. That's what happened to these people. When these Pandavas were in an yielding disposition, they thought these Pandavas were weak. So, a little higher up, nothing doing. They said, not even as much land as could be accommodated on pinpoint. I will not give anything. Get out. When it comes to that, then war might become necessary. Krishna goes back to his friends, the Pandavas, and tells them, all right, now fight. If you can't bring about justice by peaceful methods, if you have explored all the possibilities, this applies to our domestic situation, social situation, political situation, economic situation, everywhere. If you have explored all possibilities and failed everywhere, then the final resort. The final resort may mean some sort of, I'm using a bad word, but I hope you'll understand, some sort of violence may become necessary. It may be a strike, it may be non-violent, non-cooperation, you know what Gandhi did in India. Anything, some method of the use of power might become necessary. When it becomes necessary, it becomes your duty. This is a very strange gospel which has to be understood correctly and applied very wisely in our life. Yield, 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 yield. Yield, whatever you can, yield. Work for peace to the utmost extent. Work for harmony to the utmost extent. Explore all possible ways of maintaining peace and harmony. When everything has been done and nothing is of any use, strike. Risk your very life to make sure that justice is done. It's an extremely delicate endeavor. Right? Krishna gives the green light. War is determined upon. As usual, as is done in modern politics, both the parties go canvassing. Some people go to both the parties, they go to each prince. Please come and join me, come and join me, come and join my party. Several kings and rulers join one man, several kings and rulers join the other party. It is said, and one day, both these people went to the house of Krishna. It's an interesting sidelight. Both these people went to the house of Krishna. Krishna was lying down, pretending to be sleeping. And then, eventually, suddenly woke up, looked at both of them. Oh, hello. Hi. Now what do you want? They said, we are going to fight. Both of them are going to fight. We are going to fight with each other. We want your help, he says. He says the same thing. Now what must I do? I am supposed to be impartial. I am supposed to be the friend of both. He said, all right, I made one decision. I'll give you a choice, says Krishna. First, he tells the wicked man, I'll give you a choice. On the one hand, on the one side is the army. I have got a big army. On the one side is this army. On the other side is myself. And I'm not interested in fighting. I don't like to fight. I'll do some job, whatever else you give me. Huh? I can drive a horse. I can ride a chariot. I can do all sorts of things. I am not interested in fighting. I am good for anything else. So, on the one side, myself, and on the other side, the army. Krishna tells this wicked leader, choose. I am only guessing, probably the wicked man that would. What do you want this man for? Huh? Here is one man and there are 10,000 people, soldiers. What am I going to do with this man? And he says he won't fight also. What is it? It's sort of beauty in procession, is it? Shall I put this man on top of my chariot and take him round? You know what they do now? What do they call that now? You know, these film stars sometime go to the war fronts for boosting up the morale of the forces. Are we going to take this Krishna around for boosting the morale of our army? What are we going to do? He says, forget it. This wicked man says, sir, I'll rather have your army. Yeah? That's something good. Krishna says, your choice. You have the choice. Whatever choice you have is right. Get out. He is gone. The other good man who was watching this game, he says, I am so happy that fellow chose your army and not you. Because if I have righteousness on my side, if I have the divine on my side, again, we are not saying that one should have Krishna on his side, or Mr. Krishna, or Mr. Christ, or Mr. Buddha. No. All these we shall discuss later as we go on. We should have the divine on our side. We should have God on our side. Or we should have righteousness on our side, the right on our side. What is God? We don't know. We shall come to that later. What is divine? We discussed yesterday also. Divine is light. Divu, Deva, divine, daylight, all these come from the same root. What do I need in life? I don't need anything in life except light, inner light. This inner light must be there and it must be constantly kindled, bright. There is a beautiful prayer in the Vedas which is accepted as the foremost prayer of every Indian. Probably you have come across the word Gayatri. Everyone is supposed to repeat this quite a number of times every day. People usually repeat this without understanding the meaning. It's the most sensible thing to do. When you are asked to repeat something, go on repeating a mantra without ever trying to know what it means or how it should be used. When we are invested with a sacred thread, I don't know if you are familiar with all this, we are given this mantra and from that time we are supposed to repeat it 3 times a day. When this happened to me, I was about 10 or 12 years old and my grandmother was extremely orthodox and strict. She would say, unless you do this, I won't give you your morning coffee. So what do? We make sure that she is watching. Put a cloth around. Hey, finished. Come on, my coffee. What did I do? Coffee. My mantra is coffee. I am not interested in repeating this prayer. I am interested in my coffee. That's what happens when all this becomes mechanical and meaningless. The mantra is Om Bhur Bhuvasvah Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Dhyo Yona Prachodayat. The meaning is, we adore the Supreme Being with this prayer. May He enlighten my intelligence. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing if you try to grasp the significance. I am not praying to God or whatever it is that I may get married. to a beautiful girl or a beautiful man, boy, I'll look after that. There they are walking along the road, I go out and I pick out, pick and choose. That's my job. I don't want a God or divine being to come and write an exam for me, I'll do that myself. I am not praying to God for a loaf of bread, it's already there in the house. What do I want? The only thing that I need in life, the only thing that can make a vital difference to my life is an enlightened understanding. It's a beautiful prayer. If you don't need to bother about the words. I am not asking you to repeat this prayer every morning, afternoon and evening, but if you grasp the significance of this, I need this inner light. This inner light is Deva. This inner light is divine. So I must have this inner light in order to fight the battle of life. That is what Arjuna said. It is not as though Krishna was that important. Eventually he became important. Krishna became extremely important for the success of their mission. But so far as we are concerned, what is of vital importance is that this inner light must be burning all the time in our life. Then we don't need the wealth of the world. We don't need the support of the masses. The inner light is superior to everything else in this world. Someone said this very beautifully. If you have all the world, if someone has the whole world with him, and if you only have yourself plus enlightenment, you are superior. Let us say, on the other side, there are 25 million people. But on your side, you have infinity plus one. One plus infinity. This is superior to everything else. One plus infinity is superior to any number you can conceive of in the world. One plus infinity. You plus the divine. The inner light. So this man was quite happy and he went away. The war started. There is a... some of you are interested in astrology also. Something extremely tricky took place before the war was actually commenced. And probably you have in it a lesson of how combatants behaved in those days. You are familiar. Now, here is the wicked army, the army of the wicked people. Here is the army of the righteous people, good people. The wicked people sent a member of their clan to the adversary, to the enemy ranks at night. At night they were all friends. The mission was, go and find out, one of these five brothers was an astrologer. One of these five brothers was an expert astrologer. Go and find out from this astrologer boy, what is the question? When should we, please listen very carefully, when should we commence the battle so that we may win? What an extraordinary question. I am breaking into your house and asking you just a couple of questions. I am a robber. I am asking you the first question, where is your revolver? Will you hand it to me? And then please tell me where your money is kept. Will you do that? And yet this man did. Because he says, A gentleman comes and asks me a professional question, and professional ethics demand that I should give him the right answer. it doesn't matter if that means signing my own death warrant. That's actually what it means. He says, please tell me when I should start the war so that I can kill you. He calculates very beautifully. He says, all right, start the war on the new moon day, you will win. This boy goes away very happy. We will start the war on the new moon day, and if your predictions are correct, we will win and you will be killed. As soon as this man is gone, this astrologer boy goes and tells his other brothers, so and so came, I told them. What an extraordinary intelligent boy you are. You have signed our death warrant, not only yours, the whole lot. He says, what am I to do? He asked for a professional advice, and I gave him. Then they all go to Krishna. Sir, this is what has happened. The war is already finished. We have determined that we shall die. Krishna says, all right, that's why I am here, I'll save you. I am here only for that, I'll save you, don't worry. It is said that he went to the river the day previous to new moon day. You must watch attentively. The day previous, tomorrow is the new moon. Yes? Today he goes to the river and performs a ceremony, a ritual that is supposed to be performed on the new moon day. A sort of Sunday ritual on Saturday. And Krishna is divine. So the sun and the moon, being the celestial bodies or divine personalities, they take personal forms, come to that place and ask Krishna, what are you doing now? And he says, what? What's wrong? The new moon is tomorrow. You are doing this thing today. And Krishna asks a very intelligent, and he must have been a lawyer for the moment. He says, what exactly, how do you define full new moon? How do you define new moon? When the sun and the moon come together, no? You are both here, that's all I want. Go ahead. What do you call the new moon? New moon is the day on which the sun and the moon come together in a straight line. So you are here, straight line. This is the new moon. Like, who was that? Pope Gregory or somebody who rearranged the calendar. Krishna rearranged the calendar on that day. And thus, one day in the lunar calendar was swallowed by Krishna. With the result that Saturday became new moon day, the next day was the most inauspicious time to start the war. The next day was the most inauspicious day for starting the war, and they who started the war perished. In this manner, it is said that Krishna, even though he did not fight, he saved the situation for the Pandavas in innumerable ways, which again gives us a clue. We are not interested in Krishna. We are not interested in these personalities, in these gods and goddesses, in these celestials or non-celestials, divines or devils. We are not interested in them. We are interested in the truth. And the truth that is revealed to us here is, if this light is kindled in you, and if this inner light is bright in you, however terrible the situations we may have to face in our life may be, however terrible they may be, this inner light will enable us to find our path. This is most important. The inner light will save us from extremely difficult and delicate situations. In the Mahabharata war, the inner light is represented by Krishna. the Mahabharata war, this inner light is represented or embodied in Krishna. And in our case, Krishna means this inner light. I must see that this inner light is kindled. And forever burning bright. That is the divine. That is Krishna for me. That is God for me. And if this inner light is there, then I'll see the path of my life in this light. And all problems, which are nothing but shadows, what I call problems, what I call ghosts, what I call troubles and difficulties in life, they are nothing but shadows. When this light is there, these shadows disappear and success is mine without doubt. What happens? No. I'll conclude with another interesting story. Yesterday I told you that the father of these 100 wicked children was a blind man. He was born blind. His own father was a great sage and rishi, yogi. And that yogi was called Vyasa. It is said that a few days before the war actually started, this old yogi visited his son and said, "I see that a big war is going to be fought between your sons and their cousins, your sons and your nephews. Would you like to watch the battle? In which case, I can temporarily open your eyes. I can give you temporary eyesight. I've got some magic power." And this old man says, "What for? I don't want to. Look at this silly thing. I've been blind all these years. Huh? And just now you are going to open my eyes. What am I going to see? Killing. I don't want it. I don't want. Moreover," this is another interesting, very, very interesting thing. "Moreover, on the side of these wicked people, there was great might, terrible power." Probably you find the same thing even in the modern world. Terrible power is often wielded by wicked people. On their side was invincible power, almost invincible power, in the person of one hero. He was called Bhishma. And this Bhishma had a boon. And the boon was, "You will die only when you want to die. Otherwise, nobody can kill you." It's a fantastic boon, isn't it? A fantastic boon. That this Bhishma could never be killed by anybody in this world. And this, the blind king knew. He said, "What nonsense. Bhishma is on my side. Who is going to destroy my children? Forget it. If I have a few hydrogen bombs, who is going to kill me?" But then the problem is, those hydrogen bomb may go off accidentally. Then what happens? Then this Vyasa says, "Alright, if you don't want to see the battle, never mind. I'll appoint a minister." This blind king had a minister called Sanjaya. "And I will endow this man with an extraordinary power." I don't know if this will happen in a few days. Probably some of you young people might be able to witness this too. You know what happens in television now? What happens in television? The play goes on in the studio, and you are able to see it here in your own room. The play or whatever it is, the fun goes on in the studio, television studio, and you are able to see it here. this Gita was done in a reverse television. The play was going on the field, the battle was going on the field. Somebody was able to see it sitting in a house. How this is, I don't know. Probably in another few years, some scientists will discover that sitting here, some sort of, what do you call them? Closed circuit television, is it? Closed circuit television? That you sit in a room and you are able to see what goes on everywhere.
Yes?
Yes? Now, something like that, something like a closed circuit television. But the Sanjaya, it is said, was even able to read the minds of all those people. And then give a running commentary sitting in the palace. This running commentary business was not invented by America. It was there in the Gita. On the first morning, the Sanjaya goes to the blind king and says, "Sir, would you like to hear the running commentary of what goes on in the battlefield?" He says, "Shut up. I know what's going on. In half a day, this Bhishma will chop off everybody's head. I know it." In other words, might is on my side. And where there is might, there is right. What are you talking? And he says, "All right, if you are not interested, why must I impose myself upon you?" So he goes away. But he is still watching through the closed circuit television. He is still watching, and perhaps there was this videotape recording also. All these are recorded there and kept. All that took place on the battlefield was recorded and kept. On the 10th day, Bhishma was defeated, not killed, defeated. And Bhishma falls down. On the 11th morning, Sanjaya comes running to this blind king and he says, "Hey, Bhishma has collapsed." Then this blind king, to use a figurative expression, had his eyes opened, inner eye opened. "Oh, I thought might was right. I was wrong. Whatever may be the might of the wicked man, he is bound to be defeated." This is one of the most fundamental principles governing the world. Fire, which has terrible destructive powers, will eventually burn itself out. If you study history, probably you will find this again and again. The great despots, the great autocrats, people who could shake the whole world, people who wanted to dominate the whole world and therefore killed all their enemies right and left, eventually they destroyed themselves. It is said of Alexander the Great, you know the story, he went right up to India, conquering everything on the way. He had great ambitions of becoming the world emperor, emperor of the whole world, long before Britain attempted it. And his march was halted in India, and he retreated. I believe even now there is a small grave somewhere in Persia or something where his body lies buried with a small inscription on top: "Here lies the man who wanted to conquer the whole world. Please don't disturb him from here." Here lies the man in a small coffin, a man who wanted to rule the world, but please don't disturb him from this 6 foot by 3. This is all the land that he owns now. This is what happens. And so, when this Bhishma fell, Sanjaya comes and tells Dhritarashtra that Bhishma has fallen. He says, "Now tell me what has happened." "Dharmakshetre, Kurukshetre, Samaveta, Yuyutsavaha, Mamakaah Pandavaschaiva Kimakurvata Sanjaya. It is the blind king who asks, now tell me please, what happened? How did the battle start and what happened? And this battle, though it was supposed to have been fought 5,000 years ago, has deep spiritual significance, psychological significance for you and me, and can help us in our own daily battle of life if we understand the message rightly. That is what we shall discuss from tomorrow. In trying to meditate upon we took the two initial steps yesterday of sitting erect with the backbone straight, and then watching the breathing. Watching the breath literally means, watching the breath literally means watching it. You are tracing the breathing process, the breath as it enters the nostrils, goes into the lungs and comes out, and you are watching it. Then a little later you will begin to hear the breathing. You heard a few ideas so far. If the mind wanders away, try to bring it to one of the central ideas in tonight's discussion that appeal to you. See if you can hold just that one idea in the mind. If the mind wanders away, bring it back to the breathing itself. as and when the mind begins to wander, bring it back to the breathing. Who passed away, Shankara? Father?
Yes.
The father of one of our brothers, Shankara, passed away, I believe. Passing away is good, isn't it? And we shall remember him and offer our prayers so that the departed soul might be helped onward in its evolution. Om Triyambakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushtivardhanam Urvarukamiva Bandhanan Vrityor Mukshiyam Amritat. Om Triyambakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushtivardhanam Urvarukamiva Bandhanan Vrityor Mukshiyam Amritat. Om Triyambakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushtivardhanam Urvarukamiva Bandhanan Vrityor Mukshiyam Amritat. Sarvesham Swasti Bhavatu, Sarvesham Shantir Bhavatu, Sarvesham Purnam Bhavatu, Sarvesham Mangalam Bhavatu, Sarve Bhavantu Suginaha, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pasyantu, Makaschit Dukkhabhag Bhavet. Asatoma Sadgamaya, Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amritam Gamaya. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. God bless you.